The fourth theme I'd like to talk to you about is that of the writer and the audience. Now, for the writers that we'll be dealing with in this course, and of course for many, many, the vast majority of other writers in colonial or formerly colonial societies, it's obvious that the only way to build a better society for the future, a better society, that is, than the exploitative society of impoverishment for the majority that exists under imperialism, the only way of building a better society is to increase the standard of living of the masses. And most realize that this can only be done by activating the masses to act in their own interest. That is to say, they don't believe that this kind of outcome is likely at all through the benevolence of those who hold power. And why? Well, because those who hold power, those who typically hold power either under imperialism itself or after imperialism, are those who benefit by the status quo, who benefit by the continued impoverishment and exploitation of the masses. So the elite are not going to build a better society in an altruistic way. They have to be forced or gotten out of the way, and therefore the masses have to be activated. And the authors want to play some role in reaching and activating the masses with a powerful, positive social message. And this is a problem, because these writers, by definition, are among the most westernized of the people living in the colonial society, or the formerly colonial society. They're westernized by virtue of the fact that they have a Western education, which enough that permits them to write in a Western language in what for them is an imperialist language, because it's the language of the imperialists who control or used to control the society that they are in, and also by virtue of the fact that they participate in Western cultural activities, such as writing novels and short stories. Novels and short stories are not traditional cultural practices in most of these countries, with the exception of the tradition of Islam in some parts of Africa and Asia. And even there, not to a great extent. So these authors are not elite by virtue of wealth or by virtue of the fact that they're the collaborators of the imperialists, as the real elite are, the ruling elite, the economic elite, the political elite. They're not the collaborators of the imperialists. They're opposed to the imperialists and their collaborators, but they are estranged from the masses in some of the same ways, mainly by their culture and education. The masses of people, peasants or workers, don't have the language skills to read literature written in a Western language. They don't read and write in the imperialist language. The imperialists created schools to teach people their imperialist language. The English taught English, the French taught French, and so on. But they didn't do this to spread universal literacy among the masses of the people. They did it to train a collaborationist elite to help them govern, rule, and exploit the masses. So the masses don't have these language skills typically, or the few who do don't have the leisure or the cultural history to read serious Western-style literature. It's important to remember that novels, short stories, plays, these are all Western cultural phenomena. They typically don't exist in the societies that we're talking about. So, culturally, though not economically, the authors are closer to the elite, closer in education, their degree of Westernization, closer in culture, although they feel alienated from the collaborationist elite, the elite who benefit by helping the imperialists or the neo-imperialists, by perpetuating the status quo in which the masses are exploited and oppressed and kept poor. Ideologically, these authors wish to champion the masses, because they want to build this better society, and that can only be done by raising the standard of living of the majority of people. And ideologically, the authors would like to speak to the masses too, communicate to them. So this is a contradiction. How are they to do this? And there are a number of ways in which these authors have addressed this contradiction, but it still remains a contradiction. One way is to write not in an imperialist language, or what to them is an imperialist language, a Western European language, but to write in a local language. Now, there's problems with this. Normally, in the colonies that we're talking about, there are many local languages. The imperialists drew the boundaries of the colonies according to their own needs, and not in order to reflect any kind of actual boundaries among different ethnic groups or linguistic groups. So there are typically lots of original languages, and not everybody knows them all. That's a problem. We'll see some of our authors in this course have tried this. Simbenus Mann, back in the 60s and early 70s, tried to start or participate in a cultural movement which included publishing journals and writing literature in the Wolof language, a widely understood language in Senegal. He gave this up for another activity that I'll talk to you about in a minute. Ngugi Wa Thiong'o, the writer who, one of whose works we're going to read from Kenya, has devoted himself to this goal in the last 20 years or more. That is to writing essays, fiction, short stories, and so forth, exclusively in Gikuyu, the most widely spoken language, African language, in Kenya. And in fact, it was because he began to do this in the middle 70s, he began to write socially critical literature in Gikuyu, and particularly began to write plays in Gikuyu, which are then performed to masses of people, that he was arrested, imprisoned, and ultimately had to go into exile in the United States. As long as he confined his social criticism to writing in English, which was only accessible to a small elite, many of whom, of course, were in the ruling elite, he wasn't bothered very much. So one approach is to take on the original language. Another is to make movies. Ousmane Sembène turned from writing in Wolof, a native language, to making films. Now, with film, it's possible to address an essentially illiterate audience, and for that matter, with some fairly simple changes, mainly dubbing from one language to another, dubbing the sound, you can have the same film with sound dubbed into many languages and address many different linguistic groups. So film is one vehicle that some of these writers and many others have used to try to reach a mass population. And Simbenu Usman is probably the most famous filmmaker in Africa today. He's getting quite old, but his films are a major cultural event when they appear. And they deal with themes similar to those that he deals with in his books, the same themes. A few writers, as I've said, basically ignore this issue as unsolvable or intractable and address themselves to those who can read and write in the imperialist language, be educated, both in their own society, in the case of Achebe in Nigeria, and elsewhere in the English-speaking world. And that's that. But most try to deal with this question of getting closer to the masses in a more direct way. Now, this is a constant problem for these writers, and it's basically the function of what is the writer's role in society. We have similar issues, though they don't tend to be discussed very much, I think, for the most part. We have similar issues about concerning American literature and writers in all countries, but it's particularly acute in societies where most literary activity is in a foreign language, a language that's foreign to the majority of the population. Another society where this is very acute, in addition to Africa, for example, or Asia, Latin America, is Haiti, where there's a big movement now on the part of quite a number of writers to produce literature in Haitian Creole, the language of the majority of the population, in order to help the project of making it possible for universal literacy to take place, the idea being that you can only really have widespread literacy in a country if that country has a language in which people learn to read and write. And in Haitian Creole, the upper class is always forbidden education in Creole, and which is the language of the majority of all the population, and has ensured that a school only takes place in French. Well, that's stopped now, but it's still a major undertaking in Haiti among writers who have a similar orientation to the writers that we are reading in this course, to reach the masses and to make it possible for them to get educated, to become literate, to participate in the life of the society. Thank you.